Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. And today, before we start our show, in acknowledgement of the fact that it has been a magical day full of dreams coming true, not only for myself, but for other people, I will play If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley, and then we'll begin our program.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be found by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real.
That was If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley. And a thank you to Diana Monfort for starting this day off on the right foot and basically domino effecting a whole day of telephone conversations, and everything ended in a very good place. So thank you, Diana. And now onwards to our show, Sword and Sandals Cinema, Part 1, Ron Carson's Colosseum. And let us see if we can talk to Ron here. Ron, are you present?
I thought I just heard him.
Oh, okay. How are you, Andrea?
I'm very well. I'm ready to get back in the routine after being gone for quite a while. For work reasons, I wasn't able to attend, but I'm back.
You are greatly missed, and see another dream come true today. You're back on the show. That is awesome.
It's a magical night. It's a magical night. And where is
Ron? I don't know, Ron. If you're here and you can't be heard, just dial back in again, and we'll hook you up. See, maybe that's him over here.
Could be.
Ron, is that you?
Yeah.
It most certainly is.
There we go.
There he is. Hey,
okay,
we're back.
The band is back together.
Yes.
That's right.
We are now in cahoots in getting the Colosseum raring and ready to go, just in time for spring, too. Hi, Andrea.
Hello, Ron. How you been, my friend?
Good. Long time no speak, and we miss your presence here at Hercules' radio show, so it's nice that we were reunited, and it feels so good, as Peaches and Herb used to say.
Well, I miss it also, but, you know, circumstances beyond my control, you know, unfortunately work, you know, there is a very high tourist season from December till just now, actually. So regretfully, I was unable to attend, but the summer is here and that means I'm back and ready to go. So what are we discussing tonight, Ron? We have some interesting topics tonight, I think.
Yeah, you know, we're going to be analyzing the sword and sandals genre through animation, comedy shows, and movies, actually, you know, that
and
kind
cartoons.
Of like...
cartoons.
And, yeah, animation. That's what I said earlier.
Yeah, right,
so,
right. Oh, I'm referring to the other kind of... Go ahead.
No. Let us start with the fact that, if you recall, Hercules, we used to watch a cartoon featuring your namesake on Channel 11 many moons ago on your big console TV in the Bronx.
I remember those days, the mighty Hercules.
That's right. And that actually was a nice introduction to the younger crowd. At that time, we were all young, of course. How time flies when you're having fun.
Hey,
No, we're not rubbing it in. You're young. You were young, too, at the time, Andrea, so don't worry about it.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. But we always used to watch this animated feature religiously, and who would have known that decades later, my big bro, cousin, you know, favorite superhero in the sword and sandal genre, actually became Hercules Invictus, and such a small world. And I just want to ask my cousin, what did you take out of that cartoon when we were watching it way back when?
Well, actually, I've always identified with Hercules, and my given name in Greek, but anglicized, never quite fit correctly. So it took me a while to find my resonance and then to accept it and to operate from it. And that's actually one of the names that I accepted rather than making do with the names that I got stuck with in an Anglo country. So that cartoon certainly helped because I resonated with the cartoon. I resonated with the Sons of Hercules TV show and the Hercules movies. While other kids wanted to be DJs like you or firemen or policemen, I wanted to be Hercules or a mighty son of Hercules at the very least and to go off and have adventures. And when I was in grammar school, my mother made me a Peplum Hercules costume, and I used to walk around Manhattan with it.
Wow.
Yes, I remember that when Aunt Elizabeth created this attire for him. And you know something? He actually looked great. I mean, too bad we didn't take a picture. That would have made a great throwback Thursday on Facebook, you know?
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh,
and I had
wow.
a beard at 11, so there you go.
Yes. And long hair to boot,
wow.
too.
Yep.
Our grandfather always castigated him. I remember in the 1972 trip that we went to Greece, we always were always at the table, and then he looked at Hercules, and he goes, "What is it with this long hair over here?" You know? He couldn't understand.
Yeah, many people.
Yeah, well, nobody understood that back then, yeah. Well, I think you made a wise choice, Hercules.
I'm sorry?
The name fits you well. I think you made a wise choice. The name fits you well. And I don't know you as anything else other than Hercules, but I don't think any other name would have fit you. I think Hercules is the perfect choice, and I'm glad you made the change.
And I legally...
Before he became Hercules, he was no. Before he became Hercules, gang, he was known as Thor.
My TV show,
really?
Thor the Barbarian, yes. Had a TV show
yes.
and
wow.
a podcast, and I used to do like a convention and theater and guerrilla theater in the streets of Manhattan. That ended with the Twin Towers falling. because
those
that came in with machine guns were not very understanding of some guy walking around in Manhattan in leather and fur and having a broadsword strapped to their back. So
those days
ended like that. I got tired of being stopped on every block and checked out. And basically they were told that I'm New York City characters
sad,
that wander around and that I'm harmless.
But
it became too much and I stopped.
When he did Thor the Barbarian, I was his announcer, and I put my Adam West impression to good use. Because I read the intro and the outro like Batman.
Well,
I'm sure
I
you did.
I will spoil a little surprise tonight. Nothing said in stone yet, but it seems like new doors are opening, and I may be bringing a few of my shows to cable.
Wonderful.
So you may have the chance to do announcing again, and I'll have to write a script. We'll have to find copyright-free Greek music or some music from one of the artists that send me CDs and go through the whole process again. But we might restart that journey and hope that incidents like Twin Towers, which stopped it, don't revisit us again.
Well, I promise you one thing, that we're going to keep the Cape Crusaders legacy alive, being that I also floored Adam West personally with my impression of him when the only time I ever met him at Comic-Con in Rhode Island. He was just so floored by it. So that would be like an honor for me to actually continue my Batman delivery.
There you are.
I'm looking forward to it.
You should send it to DC Comics because your impersonation is very, very good, and they're probably looking for people to impersonate Adam West because they're still making cartoons with him. So,
Yes, they are.
Careful, Robin. It's quite a drop.
Onward to cartoons inspired by Sword and Sandal Cinema.
We're going to keep his legacy alive, gang. That's all I could say in honor
of
Cape Crusader himself, whose memory remains eternal and everlasting. He will still be with us in spirit, and he will be with us as well, thanks to my wonderful impression of the Dark Knight.
Indeed.
So there we go.
I have a question. Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead. Okay, I have a question.
No, you had a question.
Really
go ahead.
I do have a question, and only you guys can answer it. But the Hercules animated series, I barely remember that. But now, was that a comedy, or was it a children's show, or was it a series? Tell me a little bit more about that, because I don't really remember. I do remember, and Ron, we've discussed this, I strongly remember the Fractured Fairy Tales from Rocky and Bullwinkle, because actually I still watch Rocky and Bullwinkle on a regular basis and love the Fractured Fairy Tales. And in reality, it wasn't meant to be funny. I mean, every one of those Fractured Fairy Tales had a story, and it had an ending that was a learning process. I mean, we all learned a lot of fables through that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really something you could laugh at, or everyone had a specific story. But the Hercules animation, what was that? Was it a comedy? What was it?
Well, you know something? The man himself can probably answer that question. So I'm going to give it back to our ever-gracious host. Xavier?
All right. It was made by the same people who made the early Superman cartoons. And the Hercules looks like Superman to some extent. He had a magic ring of power with an H on it, and that was the secret to his strength. And it was a kid's cartoon. It was a series. It gave birth to a lot of merchandise at the time we were kids, like bubble gum with tattoos, and they had those sketch pads that you lift the sheet when they disappeared. There was a board game and a bunch of other things that came out at the same time.
Wow.
Hercules was accompanied by Toot, who was a satyr who played the flute, and Newton, who was a centaur who repeated himself fairly often. There was Hel, who was based on Helen of Troy, and she was like a love interest, although they never really played into that. and the bad guy was Daedalus, who was the inventor of Greek mythology, except here he was like a dark wizard scientist. And there was a prince,
wow,
I remember, and the city of Caledon, I think, and then there was Olympus. And the cartoon took place mostly here. And some were regular myths that they transformed. Some were things that they made up. But they were short cartoons. They came out on VHS a long time ago, and there were a couple of collections on the DVD. I managed to pick them up on DVD. The VHS ones I had got moldy in the last flood, so goodbye to VHS.
Yeah, they all do, yeah.
So are those still available on DVD, cuz? Because I'd like to get a copy.
I don't know if they're still available on DVD. They're on YouTube, a lot of them. So if you go to YouTube,
oh, wow,
Mighty Hercules, the theme song is there, and a lot of them are there as well. And
I do remember his little centaur friend in that particular cartoon. Now he was always standing by his side, and I also remember that they also focused on one of the 12 labors throughout each episode too.
They had the labors too, and they had some other myths that they made Hercules miss. And the only episode I remember the labors was the Hydra, because that was funny.
Yeah, and the Nemean lion too was also a part of, and the Nemean lion too, if you remember.
Yes, it was a very interesting introduction to the myths, and it was a vehicle for spreading the knowledge of Greek mythology around the time we were kids. Like the Hercules and Xena shows, which were live action later on, they weren't exactly accurate. Just like the Mighty Hercules wasn't exactly accurate, but for a generation, they were their introduction to the Greek myths. So I'm pretty happy
that
they
did that. Out. That was quite interesting.
Are we referring to the Kevin Sorbo Hercules?
And Ron and I were also discussing when we chose the topic of animation and cartoons and things. Of course, we had to mention History of the World Part 2, which is our favorite movie, where they introduced the comedic side of the Sword and Sandal, which was done brilliantly by Mel Brooks, of course. No one could have done it better. And, I think that kind of, I don't want to say made a revival, but when that movie came out, a lot of people had been awakened once again to the sword and sandal genre with that movie specifically. And I think it was brilliantly done. Ron agrees with that, I know.
Yeah, I love the part when he's having the sword fight with the late, great Gregory Hines, and then his sword gets cut off, and he goes, "I'm fighting with cardboard!"
I know. Oh, it was great, yeah.
And then Dom DeLuise orders them to fight to the death after dessert!
Are there any other comedy sword and sandals that you could think of between the both of you?
Hercules meets the Three Stooges, or the Three Stooges meets Hercules.
Oh,
he was
on
Popeye cartoons. Hercules was Bluto, and sometimes Popeye was Hercules. So they play that both different ways.
Well, blow me down.
Yep.
I eat me spinach even when I was Hercules. Yeah,
I gotta save olive. I gotta save olive from. I gotta save olive oil too. You know.
Thank you. I've learned a lot.
Well, not only we were talking about Batman. Of course, the one thing I love about the show, that's why King Tut, the late great Victor Buono, is one of my top five villains, is because of the fact that they actually focused on the sword and sandal / peplum genre whenever he was on every episode, which was just absolutely awesome. I mean, you actually see Batman and Robin fighting his henchmen with swords, and the motif in the background was also of peplum nature when King Tut's palace was, you know, decked out in the same fashion as, as a castle where royalty is, and he was just fantastic. I mean, Victor Buono was just one of the most classiest actors to ever grace the small and large screen, And I think his contributions to Batman were not only humorous, but they were also to the point where he actually lived the part, you know, when he became King Tut after he got knocked over the head.
To television and do it well, because there are a lot of actors that are great on the big screen but can't do TV and vice versa. But he was definitely versatile, for sure, and played that part well.
He was,
I remember.
He was not only a good comedic actor.
Sure.
He was not only
and
a good
character.
Comedic actor, roles of drama very well, too. He appeared in a lot of movies. One of his best pictures he ever did was Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which got him a supporting actor nomination for the Oscars, and he lost, unfortunately.
For some reason,
and
you're breaking up. I don't know if it's my end or your end, but I'm
no, I'm fine. I can hear you both loud and clear. I mean, but to make a long story short, Victor Buono appeared in a lot of, 60s dramas and cop shows and adventures. And, we lost him way too early at the age of 43. And you never could tell that he was that young because of his girth. I always thought that he was a lot older when I saw him first as King Tut, but I think he was just the fact that he was doing all these tortures to the dynamic duo, if you recall, and they were, of course, very peplum-oriented. Like, if you remember Hercules, the ancient Theban pebble torture, you know what I mean? When he had him and Nefertiti in the vases. And they were going to be eliminated with the rocks.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, I seem to be either, I don't know if the connection on my end, but you're breaking up and then I lose you for a few seconds at a time. I don't know if it's me or
well,
one of you gentlemen.
Why don't you call us back and we'll get you back on the air here.
Wait, Ron, it seems to be on your line, the disturbance.
It is? Excuse me. I just finished charging my phone, guys.
Okay, let's.
Well, it has nothing to do with the charge; it's a signal.
Yeah, let me quickly test it. It's 760 area code. Say a few words. I'm going to shut it off.
Yeah. Okay. As I said, the brilliance of Victor Buono is just absolutely outstanding in anything that he did, but. The King Tut episodes on Batman truly are A1 in my books and everything because of the fact that he actually was able to keep the sword and sandals genre alive throughout that series because of his transformation into Egypt Sparrow, you know?
Well, you know, this is what's happening, and Hercules and I were discussing this the other day when we were on the Zoom with Brian. Celebrating Brian's 25 years, that this genre seems to be, I don't know whether it's fading away or just not much of it in current events, but if they would do things like bring back some of the animations and incorporate it in with maybe like the Fractured Fairy Tales again, where the younger generation could actually get some exposure to this, I think it would bring a little bit of a revival, you know, because I know I truly enjoyed watching all those things. I still do. I know we all watch things from our past because they were the best, and that's why we still watch them over and over again, because they were the best.
Nothing beats the narration of Edward Everett Horton in that segment of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Once upon a time, you know, and he had that distinguished voice. And he always commanded
very, very
your attention every time I watched a Rocky the Bullwinkle portion. And, of course, Edward Everett Horton was the voice of everybody's favorite smart canine, Mr. Peabody.
That's right. That's right. Well, yeah, that all goes hand in hand with the Rocky and Bullwinkle and the Hoppity Hooper series.
And you know who the announcer was on Rocky and Bullwinkle? Cannon himself, William Conrad.
Yes, and Hans Conried was the fabulous voice of Uncle Waldo.
That's right. Good old Hans Conried. Uncle Canoose from the Make Room for Daddy
Uncle
era.
I know. I love Uncle Canoose. Oh, my gosh. That was a lot of fun.
He was best known as Wrong Way Feldman on Gilligan's Island, too. the pilot that commandeered the Spirit of the Bronx. Yeah, they liked him so much they had him in two episodes instead of only one. So, but another versatile comedian.
They kept using those same people. Those voices were iconic, and you heard that voice, once you heard that voice, it was the perfect selection for the character that they were trying to portray, for sure, for sure.
Mm. Let me tell you something about the shows that we all grew up with over here during our time. They're unbeatable, they're timeless, and to this day, all I watch is retro TV, whether on regular television or on DVD. That's it. I don't watch any of the new stuff, which I think is just complete garbage. So.
No, I don't either. Yeah.
But
I
do like the shows that I used to watch during my youth, and to this day, I would still tune in religiously. I mean, I could say how many times I've seen some of my favorite sitcoms in the 60s, and there's a number I can't even latch on to because it's hundreds and hundreds of times, but yet I still LMAO, and I still enjoy them a whole lot better than I would watch something new that's on television right now.
And on that
we
note,
find
we have to wrap up, guys.
Yeah.
We have 3 minutes until
okay,
the end.
Okay, well, this has been fun.
Well, it's been fast. It went pretty quickly.
Yeah, let me just say one more. Let me just say one more thing about the Three Stooges meet Hercules.
Brian's going to be here for his segment. So give your contact information.
But Curly, if Curly were still alive, that movie would have been unbeatable.
Okay,
let's
you know what I mean?
Next time, Ron. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
certainly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful.
It's great
to
have you
back. Welcome
back
there, stranger. It's nice to know that the Coliseum, has been graced with your presence once again, and let's keep that going as a constant once a month. I know you will. You better.
Good to be back. Yeah.
And how can people contact you on here?
I'm only available through Facebook. I use no other social media. Andrea Tutrani, the only Andrea there. There are other Tutranis. They are my gorgeous nieces, but I'm the only Andrea there. So feel free to contact me, message me. Be happy to chat about any topic you'd like, whether it's cartoon, music, TV shows.
I was privileged to meet the gorgeous nieces when we were in Philadelphia that time.
Yes, you were. That's true.
We had a nice dinner that night.
Okay, Ron, so how can we reach you, Ron?
Laura, hit me with a friend request, and we'll be able to accommodate you. And the radio show is pretty much has been downgraded, but I still do a Saturday morning request show on WSBS.com or on the free WSBS app, where the listeners control the playlist, and I average anywhere between 20 and 25 calls during my time on the air. So anybody from your audience is welcome to chime in, and I'll play a great song from the 70s or 80s just for you. How about that?
Fantastic.
Sounds great.
And awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
I know you're pressed for time, but I just want one more thing. Let's say a prayer for my mom, your Tia Elenitsa, who left us this past Sunday 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I'm sure she's
thinking of you.
And I'm sure she's watching. She's watching from up above as well, being proud of all of us here.
Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to the next Coliseum.
You got it. I'll be in touch with you soon, Sadelfi. Okay.
Okay. Be well, guys.
Right. Okay. Love
you
both.
Stay well, you guys. Later. Bye.
Later. Bye.
All right. Bye now.
And now onwards to the one, the only Brian Walker. And Brian has a new show called Brian's Drive-In Theater. And I'm very honored to have him aboard. Greetings. How are you doing, sir? I'm doing great. Today was a miraculous day from morning to night, and it hasn't stopped yet. So the universe is good today.
Well, as I told you earlier, your life seems to be like mine, in that it's all feast or famine. So,
yep. Well, today's feast in the gods are happy.
Yeah, yeah, and those are, you know, rare and to be savored.
So tonight your topic is birthdays, and even though there aren't many Sandal birthdays, we should celebrate them.
No, and so many of them are in January that, I mean, inordinately so. I think there's something like five or six. But April was lucky enough to have two that I could think of off the bat. And one of them is Stanton Burke. And on April 8th, you know, just a few weeks ago, he turned 94.
Wow.
And you, for a lot of us, I want to say a lot of us, I'm late Gen X, but a lot of young boomers, he was probably like one of the first representations of Hercules that a lot of us remember. You know, if you were watching, you oftentimes, you know, when I was a kid, they would run Three Stooges movies, and that would be one. And a lot of the Three Stooges films in the late 50s and early 60s were, you know, cranked out pretty quickly because they were popular with children, and they ran a lot in syndication packages. And he's one of the – Sansa Burke's one of the first representations of Hercules that I can remember. And that's in the Three Stooges Meet Hercules. It's an interesting take on Hercules because we're, you know, so immersed in thinking of Hercules as a hero, and actually he's not for most of this. And I think that that's the really cool part. And you know, there again, he's still with us. There's another Hercules in the movie. Sort of the pantomime Hercules. I think he did some daytime drama work, you know, later in his career, like a lot of actors do. And he's the good Hercules. He's the one who rescues Vicky Trickett and you know, gets along with Mo, Larry, and what is it, Curly or Curly Joe? I can't remember which one it is. I should have IMDb up, and I don't. But, you know, and it's that movie that a lot of us remember when it comes to the early representations of Hercules that we've seen. Now, of course, in some of those same syndication packages, you did see a lot of peplums running through it, through them. And those, for me anyway, and you grew up in a different area. You grew up in a more urban area than I did. From what I remember, they were usually on, you know, let's say Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, sometimes Sunday nights as well. And it would be, you know, I can't remember what they called it, Sword and Sandal, you know, theater or something like that. And they would just run a bunch of titles through. And, you know, they would cycle over after. A lot of syndication packages had anywhere from 25 to 30 films, and TV stations would just start rerunning them. So if you watched it faithfully, you were going to be able to, you know, catch these a second or third time. But, you know, for some of us that don't mind rewatching films, and I'm one of them, you know, for me sometimes to – you know, really see something, a movie, if it is well done, you know, if it's a quality film, it might take you three or four viewings to catch it all, you know.
Right.
If it's directed well, if it's written well, you know, particularly, and if it's acted well. I mean, sometimes subtleties in actors' performances you might not catch the first time on the third or fourth go around, you finally get it. And you can see who the actors are and who the stars are. You know, there's a demarcation between the two. And you know, both are very enjoyable performances that people pay for, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. So I'm not passing judgment or anything like that. And I like both. Have been lucky enough to go to the theater in the late 50s and early 60s and catch a lot of these peplums since I was born, right around the end of peplum production. You're making, like I said, making me really old Gen Z. But that was, you know, one of my first you know, representations of Hercules that I saw in film. And you know, and again, you know, having, you know, Hercules be the antihero for a while is kind of interesting.
Yes, it was very interesting, and it's very true to the mythology, because Hercules, although very powerful, and although he did serve humanity and the Olympian gods, was also very dangerous. He made very many mistakes and suffered because of some of the choices that he made. And to me, spiritually, and psychologically, it always seems it's a constant reminder, especially since I legally changed my name, that there's a responsibility, that even if you're capable of really good things, you're also capable, like everybody else on the planet, of some really horrendous, thoughtless things as well. So,
True. You know, my friend Chuck, who passed away a few years ago, used to say the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yep, we are what we are. We're gods, we're devils, and we're everything in between. So all we can be is the best we can be at any given point in time, and make the
almost
most
a few minutes of each other.
Yeah. that's human nature, and that's what makes human life interesting.
You know, one thing I've always thought of as kind of a shame about Samson Burke is that he didn't get to do a lot of peplum films. I just don't think that he seems to be a very, very private guy, and I will, you know, respect his privacy. But he seems more business-headed, more business-oriented, kind of like Reg Park, you know, where acting was just something fun to do on the side, but he had bigger fish to fry.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, very little is known about his, you know, personal life. And there again, you know, I don't pry. So, you know, to each his own. And it's a shame that he did just a few peplum films. But the ones he did are actually, you're worth taking a look at. And you know, throughout later on in the 60s, he did. You know, he made a couple of spaghetti westerns and did a war flick. I think it was one of his last movies. And he was in Year of Spy as well. But he wasn't the star, you know, of those movies as he had been in the peplums. But there again, he proved to be a pretty good character actor too.
Uh-huh.
And, well, and you know, there's another birthday this month. Dave Draper, who sadly, you know, we lost last year, is also in October, or I'm sorry, not October, April birthday. And he also didn't appear in very many films. But real tie-in with peplum movies is that he used to host a local Los Angeles TV show, which was built around a syndication package, Dave the Gladiator. And unfortunately, I've never been able to find any actual footage from it. And since it was a local show, there may not ever have existed any copies of it if it was shot live or something like that. And even if it was shot on videotape, it could have been erased or lost. But like I said, I've just never seen any actual footage. But there's some still photos that exist. And, you know, if you go into my website or if you go into like Google Photos or Yahoo Photos, you'll find some of those pictures. And, there he is. He's just a really young Dave Draper, all dressed up in his gladiator leathers. And he introduced peplum films in the mid-60s. A lot of the ones that American International Pictures brought over from Italy were released directly into syndication packages. And, you know, it gave these local stations, you know, brand new, you know, fresh content. It wasn't something that had been rerun, you know, a million times on another station. So, you know, it's good for ratings to have, you know, brand new, essentially, you know, pretty new movies already in your syndication package.
Those syndication packages were great, and what I didn't realize when I was young, and then I discovered that a lot of adults didn't realize it, is that the thread tying them together were non-existent before they put the packages together. Like the Sons
exactly.
of Perseus, for instance, wasn't a thing until they put that introduction with a song and then the closing. That basically there were separate movies that had nothing at all to do with each other.
Well, and you'll remember, you know, and you seem to be a horror fan, you'll remember that the television stations that would program like a Saturday night horror show where they would run like two or more movies, you know, late at night. Some of those movies, calling them horror films was kind of tough. You know what I mean? they weren't really horror films. You also seem to be an SCTV fan. Do you remember
yes.
Count Floyd? Okay.
Yes, I remember Count Floyd.
It was sort of that effect where, you know, the movie that they were running wasn't really a horror film at all. Smashed, you know, a lot of these syndication packages were, and it was based on, you know, who got a check and who had to pay the rights for something. A lot of legalese, but I guess it did make, you know, for strange genre. if you really needed you know, genre in your syndication package, horror films were, that was one place where it just really didn't work very well sometimes. Because I watched a lot of movies on Chiller that just weren't horror films. They just weren't. A lot of them were mysteries. Universal made a spate of movies in the 1940s. A lot of them with Lon Chaney Jr. They were called Inner Sanctum, and they sort of were a little scarier than mysteries, but it would still be kind of hard to call them horror films, even though that the star is known for being in horror films. Does that make any sense?
Well, it didn't make sense in the Mill Creek collections either. I remember getting collection,
yeah.
And there were everything from Hercules movies in there to horror films to indescribable films, really, in terms of genre. But they all came under the umbrella of the Mill Creek collection nonetheless.
Well, and, you know, those Mill Creeks must have been pretty hard to put together because a lot of them are now approaching, about 20 years old, I would say.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've had the Hercules set for, probably 2005, 2006, a long time. And you know, to put 50 films together, and they do it with using public domain because they're not going to be able to pay anybody any rights. And being able to find watchable copies of 50 different movies and trying to, you know, mash them into a category, that couldn't, you know, kudos to you. Because that had to have been, that had to have been a hard job.
Yeah.
Especially trying to find copies back then, you know. I mean, it's better now that
I interviewed them years ago.
Did you?
Mill Creek people. Yes, I did on series of podcasts in Pennsylvania. It was very fascinating. They described the process that you're describing, you know, and they said it was hard, it was challenging, but nothing like that had been done on that scale before.
Yeah, and you know, thank God for them, because I think that they really helped things like archive.org, you know, the Internet Archive. They provided some initial or early copies, you know, of some of the movies, which have, you know, obviously since been replaced by, hopefully, by better versions of these films. And that's one area that I think YouTube has really helped out in. The very first copy of Colossus and the Amazon Queen that I had, which I bought on VHS. Now, that's the movie with Ed Fury and Rod Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Was black and white, and I had just assumed it was a black and white movie. It's not. You know, I saw it on AMC, I think. which was 27 years ago. And I was like, well, damn, this is in color and way sharper than the copy, you know, that I had. But it's sort of that effect, you know what I mean? But I think that those Mill Creek DVDs, and I bought over the years, a lot of them have the same movies on them.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead.
Movies too.
Yeah, and Night of the Living Dead sometimes qualifies as film noir. You know, they'll put it on one of those. It's just anywhere where they can plug up a hole. But like I said, I think they really helped, you know, a lot of the public domain archives that you see, especially archive.org, because they gave them product. And collecting all of that stuff, I mean, I don't envy them that task at all. That had to have been difficult, especially back then. Now I think it could be a lot easier. But back then, geez, I mean, that was tough.
Yeah, I have a lot of the sets, and there are a lot of the movies, and I'm reluctant to get rid of the sets, even though I haven't watched most of the movies, because they contain copies of the movies I am likely to watch. So.
Yeah, and you know what? If there's some sort of apocalypse, at least we have our physical media.
There you go.
If we can generate electricity, we can go back and watch it.
Well, more and more people are demanding the physical media because of streaming. It seems that on some streaming channels, they're changing the episodes. So if you saw something, next time you see it, it might not be the same thing that you saw before. So people, even if they want to keep their old original versions that they fell in love with and they like. So all of a sudden, you know, if you've updated it or changed the story around, people who do collect things, and that would include us, generally get upset because what they loved about, the show or the movie is now no longer there.
Great. Yes. I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment, too. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan or anything like that, but I know it's been altered to death.
Yes.
So that irks, you know, a lot of fans because it's not the movie they remember.
Right.
I get it. And I kind of agree with that. That's sort of like, you know, painting a mustache on the Mona Lisa, you know, in a sense. It's, you know, leave it alone. This is the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be any better than it was when you released it. You know, just let us enjoy it. I don't know why would you try to go back and revise something that everybody loved? You know, it just doesn't make sense. Leave well enough alone. Maybe that's the moral of the story here. And you know me. I mean, I always prefer the original. I don't care if it's some creaky old silent movie or one with a lot of pops and hisses. It's always going to be better. It's always going to be better than the remake because it's more genuine.
Right. I can't think of any remake that I've loved some remakes as much as the original. Very rarely, but true, I have found some. But I can't think of any remakes that I've loved more than the original.
No, I mean, I can't think of one where it's improved the movie. And you, besides you already know the plot. You know how it turns out.
So, right.
So why make the time investment in the remake? You know, unless it's, you know, altered somewhat, but most of them really aren't. You know, I do resent when we get into sequels. A lot of sequels, you know, are mostly just in name only. You know, after you get past what is it, 4 or 5, and it almost turns into parody after that. I'm not a big sequels guy either. I'm maybe 2-3 movies tops, but. But after that, let it be.
Yes, Scorpion King is an example of that. I love the first Scorpion King. I even loved the sequence in The Mummy Returns of The Rock as a Scorpion King. And then there were a bunch of them. I think there were like 4 more that had nothing to do with a Scorpion King other than the names of the characters. And they took it off in totally different directions. It wasn't the same Scorpion King all the time. They rewrote the myth to such an extent that it was unrecognizable, and it kind of killed all the elements that I liked in the original movie.
You know, and all of that, when we were watching it originally back when we were kids, was filtered through what people wouldn't believe now, you know, in terms of picture quality and size. A big screen back when we were kids was what, 25?
I don't remember.
25 inches diagonally. That was a big screen. And you could get bigger than that, but it started to run into a lot of money, you know. And remember how hot those things got?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. You could grow orchids on the top of most television sets back then if you could keep them watered. They would heat a room, you know, winter or summer, especially if you had a cabinet model.
Yes.
Which were like heat sinks. And you could, you know, warm your hands over them in the winter. It was old. You know, it's just very old technology, and relied a lot on electricity and tubes and heat. You know, the picture quality, which at the time, what we didn't care, you know, it was better than nothing.
I like creating antenna out of coat hangers and other things. And the top of the TV always looked like a work of abstract art, you know, to get better reception.
Well, my dad wired, when I was a kid, he hooked up two antennas that had blown off of our house in successive winter storms.
Mm-hmm.
He put them together in this kind of Frankensteinian thing, and he got a rotor for it so we could turn the antenna, and it mounted directly on the roof, you know, as high up as he could get it. And we lived in the upper Midwest, so it's pretty flat. You could pull in a lot of stations. But we could really dial them in with that rotor thing. And that thing was cool. He wired all of that up. That had to have been hair pulling.
You're
putting two antennas together and then hooking them up to a rotor. And then running all the cable, you know, back to the living room. But he was pretty serious watching. Still is, to tell you the truth. He streams some. He's got satellite. He reads a lot too. He doesn't just sit around and watch television. He's pretty active still. But the old TV antenna days were a lot of fun, if very imperfect and sometimes offering really crummy reception. I can remember once. The first time I watched Marilyn Monroe's movie, Some Like It Hot, I'd always wanted to see it. I was probably like 10, 11. half of it was at an angle, you know, and it would roll every now and then. And it was really pixelated because the station was just barely coming in. You know, we were probably having a winter storm, too, now that I think about it. And believe it or not, I stayed up and watched the whole thing, as bad as the reception was. I don't think people now would be able to stand it. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, we had very few channels. You didn't have a whole lot of options either.
No,
I mean, you had
UHF and
AB.
Three, yeah.
Yeah, you had ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, which I think people watched a lot more of back then than perhaps they do now. And then if you were lucky, we had one. We had an independent station that ran whatever. They didn't have news or anything like that. They just ran old television programming and old movies.
Yeah, I remember that. And again, it was a family thing to watch the Sword and Sandal films. See, when I grew up, that was what Greeks are very into being Greek. If you don't know that, they're very into being Greek. So these movies portrayed a lost time of glory and legend. They were Greek.
Mm-hmm.
So when we watched family things together, that's what we watched, you know, all these things or actual Greek movies if they were on one of the UHF channels. And I remember when my grandparents came over from Greece when I was very young to visit, I was very surprised they weren't wearing like a peplum. Because that's what they wore in the movie. So I thought in my young mind that that's what they wore now.
To understand your time and period when you're a child. I could certainly see how that would it would change your viewing as it being more of a family experience. Now, for me, it was exactly the opposite. It was more of a solitary thing.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it was on, you know, random times of the day and, you know, on the weekends, that is, you know, Saturday or Sunday. And I was an only child and fortunate enough to have my own television. So, you know, if it was a nice day, I wouldn't have been watching TV. I'm sure it would have been outside. But on rainy days or whenever we had like 3 feet of snow, I might have been watching, but I would watch it in my bedroom on my little black and white, which was hooked up to our monstrosity antenna. So, you know, it would pull, you know, at least I had some channels. I didn't have to worry about the built-in rabbit ear that you would get on some of the little black and white sets.
I looked at the clock. We have about 2 minutes left. The time always passes very quickly. Thank you. For tonight, and I'm looking forward to our next show. Glad we have, I think, three now we do, right?
Yes, we do.
Awesome. And how can people contact you and enter the world of Brian's Drive-In Theater? I need an echo machine.
Well, you can you point your browser at briansdriveintheater.com. And you just run a search for it in any of the major browsers, and you will find yourself at my doorstep. The site's 25 years old this year and has recently undergone a major redesign, which I'm mostly happy with except for the index page, the very front page, which I don't like. You can also interact with me on social media using Facebook. Just run a search for Brian's Drive-In Theater, and I'll pop up. I am on Twitter, but I just lurk on Twitter and have for many years. I follow people, but I usually don't post. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, okay. that's that. Oh, one other thing I wanted to say about the TV, too, is that if you're in the if you're in the Northeast area, Rust Belt, there's a great early television museum just outside of Columbus, Ohio, that I went to last year. It is awesome. They have all of these working television sets from the 1920s up to the early 60s. It's fun to see them.
Awesome. Let's do a show where we talk about that some more.
Oh, great. That sounds good.
And now we're down to the last few seconds. Thank you so much. Thank you so much to our audience. Thank you so much to everybody. Until next time, joyous journey and amazing adventures. Take care, everybody. Thanks again, Brian.
Good night, Hercules.